Ready to dive in. We're tackling stroke today. Got some fascinating medical revision notes here from Health Service Navigator.
Oh, absolutely. Crucial topic. These notes are a gold mine, whether you're a medical pro or just someone who, you know, has a brain.
Right. We all have a brain, hopefully.
Right.
So stroke, what exactly are we talking about here? It's more than just like fainting dramatically, right?
Way more than fainting. We're talking a full-on medical emergency. Blood flow to the brain gets disrupted. Like, imagine a major highway suddenly blocked. Everything grinds to a halt.
A brain traffic jam.
Exactly. And those brain cells, they need a constant supply of oxygen, nutrients, the works. Cut that off and, well, things can go south pretty fast.
So time is of the essence. Now, the notes differentiate between two main types, ischemic and hemorrhagic.
Right. You can think of ischemic stroke like a blocked pipe, most common type. And then there's the burst pipe, which is hemorrhagic, both serious, obviously. But that difference is key for treatment.
And the notes get even more specific with ischemic stroke. Mm-hmm. They mention thrombus and embolus. Sounds complicated.
It's not that bad. Think of it this way. A thrombus is like a clot that forms directly in a blood vessel in the brain, sort of gradually building up. And an embolus, that's a clot that forms somewhere else, maybe the heart, breaks free, and then gets stuck in a brain blood vessel.
So two different ways to cause the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
Blocked blood flow in the brain, leading to, you guessed it, ischemic stroke.
You got it.
So how common are these brain traffic jams? Are we talking like a fender bender or a multi-car pileup?
More like a major pileup, unfortunately. The notes say stroke is the fourth leading cause of death in the UK, even ahead of lung cancer.
Wow. That's a scary thought.
It is. About 100,000 people in the UK have a stroke every year.
100,000? That's a lot. And that's not just like something older people have to worry about.
No, not at all. I mean, age is a factor for sure. But get this, a quarter of strokes happen to people under 65.
Wow. So this is something that can affect anyone.
Exactly. And here's the thing. There are things we can't control, right? Age, gender, family history, that kind of thing. But then there's this whole other category, the modifiable risk factors, the things we can actually do something about.
So it's not all doom and gloom. There's hope. What kind of things are we talking about here?
Well, the notes are really clear that high blood pressure or hypertension is a major culprit.
That seems to be a common thread in a lot of health problems.
It really is. It's like the first domino. Manage your blood pressure, and you're much less likely to see those other dominoes fall. But it's not just blood pressure. Atrial fibrillation, diabetes, unhealthy cholesterol, smoking, even obesity and drinking too much alcohol can increase your risk.
It's like all these different rows can lead to that same destination, that disruption of blood flow to the brain.
Exactly.
We talked about atrial fibrillation or AFib before. How does that play into all of this?
Right. So with AFib, the heart basically beats out of rhythm. It's like the electrical system is out of whack. And what that can do is cause blood clots to form in the heart. And then those clots can break free, travel to the brain, and bam, ischemic stroke.
So those are those emboli we talked about earlier.
Exactly. AFib is a major risk factor for those.
Okay. So we've covered what causes a stroke and who's at risk. But how would someone actually know they're having one?
That's the million-dollar question. Recognizing the signs quickly is absolutely crucial. Because with stroke, time lost is brain lost.
So say someone is recognizing those stroke symptoms, dialing 911, what happens next? These notes mention something about bypassing a local hospital and heading straight for a stroke unit.
Yeah, that's right. When it comes to stroke, specialized care is key. Stroke units, they have these dedicated teams who know exactly what to do, can provide the most effective treatment.
Makes sense. And treatment probably depends on getting a clear diagnosis.
Right. Absolutely. Imaging is crucial here. A CT scan is usually the first step. Helps determine if it's an ischemic stroke, remember the blocked pipe, or a hemorrhagic stroke, the burst pipe situation.
The notes mention that a CT scan might not always immediately reveal an ischemic stroke, though. Why is that?
Good point. Sometimes those blockages, they don't show up right away on a CT scan. But even then, the scan is super valuable because it can rule out a hemorrhagic stroke, which is really important for making treatment decisions.
So it's like a process of elimination.
Exactly. And if doctors suspect the stroke might have happened in the back part of the brain, they might use an MRI. It gives a more detailed look at that area.
So it's like putting together a puzzle, using different tools to get the full picture. And it's not just imaging, right? Blood tests, ECGs, the notes even mention ultrasounds.
You got it. It's a multi-pronged approach, for sure. Blood tests can reveal things like blood clotting issues, other underlying conditions that could increase stroke risk. An ECG checks for heart rhythm abnormalities, like our old pal AFib,
Remember how that can lead to those traveling clots? And then a carotid ultrasound that looks at the arteries in the neck, checks for blockages there.
It's like building a case file, gathering all the evidence. And since stroke symptoms can be tricky, they can mimic other conditions, the notes emphasize the importance of differential diagnosis. Basically, making sure it's actually a stroke and not something else entirely.
Right, gotta rule out those false leads. Really important for making sure the treatment is tailored to the specific problem, whether it's a stroke, a migraine, you name it.
Speaking of treatment, the notes talk about different approaches for ischemic and hemorrhagic stroke. Let's start with ischemic. What's the game plan there?
So with ischemic stroke, the name of the game is restoring blood flow to the brain as quickly as possible. And one of the most important tools we have is thrombolysis, which is basically a clot-busting medication.
But there's a catch, isn't there? Something about a time window.
You're right. The notes are really clear about this. There's a critical 4.5-hour window from the onset of symptoms for thrombolysis to be most effective. That's why recognizing those signs early on, getting to the hospital ASAP, is so, so crucial.
Wow, every second counts. What about larger clots? The notes mention something called a thrombectomy.
Yeah, so for those bigger blockages, a thrombectomy might be necessary. Basically, they insert this tiny catheter, thread it through the blood vessels all the way up to the clot, and remove it.
Wow, it's like something out of a medical drama.
It's pretty amazing. Now, for hemorrhagic stroke, the focus shifts from busting clots to controlling bleeding and reducing pressure on the brain.
Sounds intense. How do they manage that?
Often involves medications to control blood pressure, and in some cases, surgery might be necessary either to repair blood vessels or to relieve that pressure on the brain.
So we've covered the immediate response, but what about life after stroke? What kind of challenges might someone face on the road to recovery?
You know, recovery from stroke is a journey, and it looks different for everyone. The notes do point out that stroke is a leading cause of disability, even with all the advancements we've made in treatment. Some people might experience ongoing physical challenges, things like weakness, paralysis, difficulty with speech, language.
That's where long-term management comes in. The notes mention rehabilitation, secondary prevention. What does that involve?
Rehabilitation can be a whole range of therapies, really. The goal is to help people regain as much function as possible, adapt to any new challenges. It's about getting back that independence, that quality of life. And secondary prevention, well, that's all about minimizing the risk of having another stroke.
So it's about stacking the deck in your favor.
Exactly. And that means managing those modifiable risk factors we talked about earlier, blood pressure, cholesterol, making healthy lifestyle choices, all those things play a role.
It's a lifelong commitment.
It is.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground today, from the mechanics of stroke to the importance of early recognition, the road to recovery. It's a lot to take in. For our listener who's been with us every step of the way, what are some key takeaways? Where can they go to learn more?
These notes actually recommend a great resource, the Stroke Association website. It's got a ton of valuable information, whether you're a stroke survivor, a caregiver, or just someone who wants to learn more.
So for our listeners, if you're looking for more in-depth information, support resources, you know, anything stroke-related, check out the Stroke Association. We'll be sure to include a link in the show notes. This has been, well, a truly eye-opening deep dive into the world of stroke. Before we wrap up, any final thoughts for our listeners out there?
Well, we've talked about the impact of stroke, the risk factors, the absolute importance of getting help quickly. But remember, knowledge is power, right? There's so much we can do to prevent stroke in the first place. So here's a question to ponder. What's one small change you can make today, right now, to reduce your risk or support someone who's been affected by this condition? It doesn't have to be huge. Even small steps can make a real difference.
What a powerful thought to end on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the complexities of stroke. Remember, knowledge is power, and taking action, it can truly save lives.